in the fabled land of Northern California. Nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xenial. But what is a Xenial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xenial Chronicles. This is James.
And this is Mike.
And today we have a story brought to you by Mike.
Yay! I would cue the cheering children sound effect or something like that.
Yay! Yes, no endorsements yet for this. You know, it's not this episode isn't sponsored by anything yet.
Brought to you by nobody but us.
Yes, nobody but us. I like that one. So this is something that Mike brought to me. So go ahead, Mike, take some stuff away here.
Okay. So I happened to catch while I was working, I caught a YouTube video that I saw a YouTube video that caught my eye, and I'm going to link to this video actually.
Wait a minute. You're watching YouTube while you're at work?
Yeah.
Does your boss know about this?
They do. They're okay with it. Desk job where I run stuff. Like, a lot of YouTube videos are just like documentary stuff where it's just people talking. You know, I don't have to watch the screen, but just kind of I'll run stuff just to have talking in the background while I do my thing. It's kind of a tedious job, so it keeps me from getting bored.
And I kind of sort of know one of your bosses. I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen him, but I kind of sort of know him.
Yeah,
and I think he's a pretty cool dude. He's an awesome dude. I'm not saying that he doesn't like make sure the business gets taken care of properly, because he is very professional as well.
Yes.
But he's also a kind of chill, understanding, you know, he's a cool dude.
No, yeah, he gets shit done. He knows what's up, and so is my other boss. My other boss is super chill too. Like, I have two bosses that are co-owners of the same company, and they're fantastic people, both of them.
Yeah, I don't know the other one. I just know the one. And so, yeah, I mean, I've seen a few of the environments that he's different work in, and yeah, he's pretty open to a lot of things.
Yeah,
I can say that appropriately.
Yeah, for sure.
Without giving too much away.
Yeah.
Anyway, he also knows his way around a leaf blower. I do want to say that, but moving on. that's fun.
Wow, that's funny. Good. Oh my God, knows, nobody is going to know what that means except me.
That's funny. Is he Hispanic? Does he do garden work?
Oh God!
Sure, okay. Anyway, moving on. So you were watching this YouTube video at work.
Yeah. So I was watching this video at work, and so basically, long story short, it kind of reminded me about one of the biggest experiences that I had in my young life. I was probably about 6 or 7 years old. The two of us would have been close to around the same age when this series came out. It was a cartoon series. But funny enough, I am going to present the argument about how this cartoon series was the first introduction to me understanding as a child the difference between art and commercialism.
Ah, okay.
Okay.
So this is one of these animated series that was a part of this wave of animated series in the 1980s that were set about to do toy sales and basically be giant toy commercials.
Yes.
Because of the, and we, by the way, we have talked about this in a previous podcast, about how the Reagan administration repealed a bunch of laws that, prohibited, basically TV shows from being commercials for, children's products, and the way that children's products can be marketed to children. And as a result, you saw the influx of shows like Transformers and He-Man and G.I. Joe that were specifically designed to be half-hour-long commercials for toy line products. My Little Pony, which, by the way, I do want to be clear, these are toys that I have bought my kids, and they still get to this very day. These are toys that, I mean, from where I'm sitting right now in my office loft area, I'm looking at an original Generation 1 Optimus Prime.
Oh, that's the killer. Trailer. That's killer.
And I have a child who has basically every single My Little Pony iteration you can imagine. My wife has still some collectible My Little Ponies. So G.I. Joes, all my G.I. Joes are still in a couple of barrels, toy barrels up at my dad's place, because I didn't bring those with me when I moved out. Because I didn't expect them to be worth anything. Sadly, they're not, because they've been played with, so they were all beaten up and destroyed. But I was very much a part of this. And the reason, by the way, I have the Optimus Prime now is because I actually never had it as a kid. That was considered a too expensive toy. I was sadly the kid that was bought GoBots. And if you know what I'm talking about with that, you understand the pain of
it's not GoBots. The same. Not the same.
My main focus, though, as a kid was G.I. Joes. I didn't get all the Star Wars toys, interestingly enough, with all of my obsession with it. My brothers were the ones who got the Star Wars toys. I just kind of inherited one of them I didn't destroy. Apparently, I had a great fondness for biting the heads off of Darth Vader's as a child. I don't know why, since I love that character so much now, but as a child, that was what I liked to do. One of my older brothers can tell you how many Darth Vaders I bit the heads off that were his toys.
So, good Lord, man.
It's hilarious. I know.
Funny enough, I'm sitting and I'm looking at the stuff that I've got. My wife and I both collect toys and stuff as well, and she's got some Beanie Babies. She's got a bunch of stuffed Care Bears, a Wuzzles lunchbox, Rainbow Bright over here, Smurfs. Yeah.
Wow. Oh yeah, we got so much Rainbow Bright today. Funny, I do want to add that I actually do still have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I have 5 original Star Wars figures from back in the day.
Wow.
They're not original Star Wars, they're Return of the Jedi line. Mm-hmm. They came from the Return of the Jedi line, so that was 80. I have a Han Solo.
Wow.
I have Chewbacca. I have a Rebel trooper from just a guy in green with a backpack.
Nice.
I have an original stormtrooper, and then I have a Hoth Snow stormtrooper.
Dang.
That were original toys that either my brothers had or I had, whatever, back from the 80s. I have a bunch of other figurines that I've collected over the years, but as far as the original ones from way back then that I know I have from way back then, those are the only ones I have left. But sorry,
wow.
You were saying the Rainbow Bright, the Wuzzles.
Yeah,
my wife would kill for anything Wuzzles.
Yeah, for sure. That. And this is a good place to actually open it up, because one of the things that's very, very well known, I would say, especially to us, to our generation, is that these cartoon series were developed to sell toys to children. Like, that was the point. It wasn't educational. Oh, yeah. It wasn't for continuity. It wasn't for, telling a good story. No, it was serialized episodes that legitimately introduced characters that were supposed to be desirable for kids, so kids would bug their parents to go buy toys. It was a money-making scheme.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
On all accounts. And
then even when they made the movies, the feature-length animated feature things, part of the concept in the movies, famously done in the Transformers movie, and then because of fan backlash at the time, which even back then fan backlash was huge, the nerd community would not be quiet, neither would the kids. They had to change what they did in the G.I. Joe movie. And what I'm talking about is, in the Transformers movie, they kill off Optimus Prime in the very beginning of the movie. Sorry, spoilers for a 1984 movie.
Right. He dies. Like,
they kill off
at Optimus the beginning. Prime,
which, by the way, it's still one of the best scenes. Whenever when I was watching Boogie Nights, the one time I watched Boogie Nights, okay movie, but whatever, enjoy it if you want to, or just go watch real porn and enjoy that more. There's a scene in Boogie Nights where Mark Wahlberg actually sings the main song that happens in the Transformers movie.
Oh, why you brought it up. I'm like, why?
Yes, that's why I brought it up. And there's the moment where the Decepticons are basically invaded, where the Autobots are on Earth, their base on Earth, and the Autobots are getting their asses handed to them. Megatron's going nuts, Starscream's going nuts, everybody's getting just effed up, bad time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then guess who starts rolling in? Optimus is rolling in on the truck, and the song starts. I'm not even going to attempt to sing it right here, but like, if you know what I'm talking about, if you know the song, it's like, it's a full on 80s power ballad. And then like Optimus comes in for the attack. He's in truck mode, and he like hits a ramp or something and jumps into the air, and he transforms while he's in the air, spinning, firing at Decepticons, and he's just taking everybody out. And it's like, yes, this is Optimus Prime. He's the leader of the Autobots. He is just going to take control of shit. And then Megatron fucking kills him. I'm like, what?
What?
What the hell?
Yeah.
And you have all these, you have Rodimus, you have Hot Rod, who becomes Rodimus Prime at the end. You have Megatron becoming Galvatron. You have Starscream just getting all messed up, which Starscream is one of my favorites. He's a freaking jet. He's awesome. Even if he's a bad guy, he's still a freaking jet. He's so cool.
By the way, if you haven't seen this movie, like, the celebrity voice cameos in this are just out there, man. They're all over the place, and they're awesome voices. We're talking Eric Idle. Leonard Nimoy, I think, is in it. Orson Welles is in it. Like,
Eric Idle plays kind of a medium length part. Leonard Nimoy is Galvatron, the rebirth of Megatron, which is why he was Sentinel Prime in the third live action Michael Bay Transformers movie.
Oh,
he was brought in for that because of it. That's why he plays Sentinel Prime. Is because he was Galvatron back in the day.
Oh, that's cool.
Orson Welles is Unicron, the planet eating planet. Basically, he's a planet that eats other planets.
Yeah.
Here's the one that you missed, right? Here's the one that you totally missed.
Hmm?
Hot Rod, the main Autobot character, Hot Rod.
Yeah.
Judd Nelson was the voice of Hot Rod.
Really?
Judd Nelson.
I'll be damned.
Yeah. And by the way, they did the same thing with the G.I. Joe movie. They picked a big star of the day to voice the main character.
Yeah.
That one was Don Johnson.
Wow. For G.I. Joe? Voicing.
Yeah, he was Lieutenant Falcon.
That's cool.
Don Johnson voiced that. Yeah. Freak yourself. But anyway.
All right, that's cool. That's killer.
And so the death of Optimus Prime was considered such a major thing and so much backlash that when they did the G.I. Joe movie, General Hawk was supposed to die.
Yeah.
But they had him not die. They had him just be in a coma.
Yeah. Oh, because the backlash Optimus
actually,
dying.
Actually, it was either General Hawk or Duke. It might have been Duke. I don't remember well enough. I think actually now that I'm thinking about it, I think it was Duke who was supposed to die. Because Duke was the original G.I. Joe, and Lieutenant Falcon was kind of the newer guy. And so Duke was supposed to die, and said they just had him be in a coma.
Oh, they did it to have the brevity of the situation, but they just couldn't bring it there because of fan backlash?
Yeah, fan backlash was so huge on the death of Optimus Prime, which is why when all the other Transformers came through, there was always an Optimus Prime brought back in. Even when they did, I'm just saying this for now because we'll discuss the further exploits of this on a later podcast.
Yeah.
Even when they did the really, really weird Transformers Beast Wars, where all the Transformers, are instead of being vehicles, they can transform into animal shapes.
Yeah.
And there was an Optimus Primal.
Yes.
And it was still Optimus Prime. He's just a great ape.
Yeah.
Which, again, we'll talk about developments in that at a later date. Because guess what? There's developments in that.
Really?
But anyway.
Okay.
But anyway.
Yeah, no, I want to find out about that.
This is the culture that was built around it, like Mike was saying. And part of the reason they killed off these characters was the idea that if they killed off one line of toys, they brought in a new line of toys, the kids would go buy in the new line. Because once you bought your Optimus Prime, back then anyway, once you had your Optimus Prime, you didn't need to buy a second one. And they weren't going to sell you one with different features and whatnot. That wasn't happening back then. So they had to kill off the characters to then sell you a whole new version of characters, a whole new set of characters, because you had to get those ones as well.
Yeah.
And so that kind of can work with an army like G.I. Joe, where there's just always new people in the army or new vehicles, because you can just have new shit that you introduce all the time.
Yeah.
That can also work with Transformers, because, you know, new vehicles, new shit, whatever. Some of those they can't work with. I mean, ponies, I guess they can find, you know, they had regular ponies, and they had flutter ponies, and they had the seahorse ponies, whatever. So there was different ponies, I guess, each time that they could introduce. And then there was for some reason, a freaking dragon in there. But I get it. They can introduce new things in that different times. But there are some times that can be restrictive.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing that's where you're leading to. Well, right? Something that's maybe a little more restrictive.
A little bit more restrictive, but it actually sits right in line with what we're talking about here. Okay, so I guess I'll do a little bit of a short retrospective on what was going on with the series and then what my experience was with it. Okay, so Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the series, ran for like 2 or 3 or 4 years or something like that. It ran for a long time. Now, I don't know.
We're speaking of the animated series.
Yeah,
right?
We're talking about the 19. 19- weird- yeah.
Yeah, it's not the weird freaky thing that happened after the movies where it was like they were in the costumes, but the costumes didn't articulate properly.
Yeah.
And then there was the female one, Venus de Milo or whatever.
No. That's way past what we're talking about. Way past. Okay. That's based on after the movies and stuff. No, we're going to talk specifically about, and this is, I don't know if I mentioned the exact series, but it's the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 1987 cartoon series is what I'm talking about today. Okay.
So is this the Heroes in the Half Shell one?
Oh yes, very much so. With the theme song written by Chuck Lorre.
Turtle
yes.
Power.
Yep. Turtle Power. So here's what's up, man. Here's the catch of this. Now this is based on a video that I did see. Like most of the research was done for this, and it was absolutely fascinating. So I'm going to give a slight synopsis of what's going on, but I'm also going to talk about my experience with it and what it made me realize while I was watching it, and why I was reacting the way that I did to certain parts and pieces of it. So,
okay.
Basically here, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, as a quick synopsis, started actually in 1980. I want to say it was 1983 is when it was created. It was created by two gentlemen, Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird. They started a comic book company called Mirage Studios out of an apartment in New York City. That's where they were based out of. Now, what a lot of people may know, some people may not, is the TMNT was started as a bit of an homage to Daredevil, and that there are a lot of influences based on that, right?
The truck that the ooze fell off of that mutated them is the same one that blinded Daredevil.
Yes, it's the same one that blinded Matt Murdock and gave him his powers as extrasensory stuff and all that kind of stuff. Like that was the mutagen. Yeah. But in this universe, which is not obviously the same as Marvel, the TMNT doesn't exist in the Marvel universe at all. It's just their origin is an homage to Daredevil. But there are a lot of other things that are. The name of Daredevil's mentor is named Stick. The name of the ninja clan that he is fighting against is called the Hand. And preface all this, to explain it, their master's name is Splinter instead of Stick. The ninja clan they're fighting is the Foot. Like, there's so much homage to the Daredevil series because it was their favorite series at the time, collectively, when they created this. So that's what all it was.
Yeah, and just so I believe that was during the time that Frank Miller was doing the run on Daredevil.
That would
and
make
that's
sense.
Considered probably one of the best runs of Daredevil ever really done was the Frank Miller run.
Dude, anything now, Frank maybe, Miller I did maybe, was fucking gold in comic books.
Yeah,
Frank Miller is the shit.
That, I can see how that could be a very good inspiration for
very
for
much
them
so.
At that time.
Yeah, and so. Basically, this is the dark origins of the TMNT comic was not meant for children originally. It was very dark. It was very bloody. It was very there were a lot of extra crazy shit that was going on. But it's the TMNT is just so rooted in sci-fi and crazy shit that you don't think of would happen essentially with mutant turtles that run around New York in the dark and killed ninjas. Like the ninjas were human. In the comic books, they were an actual clan, whereas in the cartoon series, they're robots. Spoilers.
And there's also, I will add the fact from my bit of knowledge of the comic.
Yeah.
The main villain that most people associate with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Shredder,
yes.
was literally a single comic villain. He was killed at the end of the first comic.
Yes.
One and done.
Yeah. Overly. He was a one and done originally. Now, what happens in the comic book is far more that's oriented with that. So you have the complications that happen with Splinter and his mutation. You have the family of who takes over the Foot Clan. Actually, in the comic books, it gets crazy. Splinter eventually retakes over the Foot. Shredder ends up having a daughter named Karai who takes over the Foot. There's an entire war between the Turtles and the Foot Clan that takes place over like a 20-year span. This shit was happening in like the mid-90s when I was like 14, 15 years old. And all the comics up to that point were like, for like 13 years, I think they were in black and white, and they transitioned to color in like 1994, I think. So there was... Well,
and that's actually a really important thing to understand is... As Mike was saying, the comic was originally in black and white.
Yeah.
There was no color involved in it.
Yeah.
And so one of the innovations, if you will, and one of the things that is considered one of the important traditional things about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is the different colors to identify each of the turtles with their headbands.
Yeah.
And their masks, basically. Over their eyes. Mm-hmm. That did not exist at all.
Yeah.
In the original comic book, the arbitrary colors chosen, which oftentimes were one of the, to me, one of the three things that make you choose your favorite Ninja Turtle is the color of the mask. Mm-hmm. The other one is the weapon that they use. And then the final one is their kind of attitude about things.
Yeah. Their attitude, those their are the personality. Way
people, that's how people identify with the turtles. That's how you pick which is your favorite turtle.
Yeah, so that's how you get your favorite.
There's some instances where there's one final thing, and that's anybody that's named Mike is basically going to be a fan of Michelangelo.
Yeah, for
that's
sure.
Just that's how it's going to end up working.
Mikey was my guy, dude. Like, that was my guy. He was always fun-loving.
I know.
Pizza's always awesome, so I love pizza, and he was always the one who was talking about it.
I know I've told you before.
Yeah.
I've told you before, but do you remember who my favorite is?
I thought you said it was Leo, or...
Yes.
Yes. You said it was Leo.
It's Leo. Now, admittedly, I like Donnie's color because I like purple. But if I had a choice between purple, blue, orange, and red, I'm definitely choosing purple.
Yeah.
That's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
But what it comes down to with Leo is I like the leadership attitude because I'm the type of guy, I want to do the leading thing.
Yeah.
I don't have all the tech stuff that Donnie has, and I don't have the attitude and the giant chip on my shoulder that Raph does. And I'm a lot more serious than what Mikey is.
Yes.
But, I definitely were more the leadership type. What it really comes down to is he's the only one that has actually real weapons that are just going to hurt somebody. Like, I'm sorry, but like nunchucks, whatever. I'm going to slice you to death with my swords.
You got
a stick. Yay, you got a stick. I'm going to get you with my swords. And okay, the size, if you know what they're actually used for, great weapon, but not really the right weapon for somebody that's kind of a hothead. Why would you give a more defensive weapon to somebody that's more of a hothead? That doesn't make sense. That's the guy that should have the swords, really. But whatever. It doesn't matter. Leo's my guy. Two katanas. First of all, the strength to wield one katana in each hand. If they're katanas, I believe they are. And if that's the case, that's some strength right there to wield one in each hand. Those are some heavy damn swords.
Yeah.
And Leo's a badass. So, I know in later iterations of the comics, he becomes even more of a badass.
Yes.
Because he has the swords. You give the swords to the badass. You don't give the swords to the non-badass guy. The non-badass guy gets two sticks joined together by a piece of metal. Sorry, dude. That's just
I will say the nunchucks were popularized by Bruce Lee like way back in the day. That's the only reason why nunchucks were like a big deal.
You can play ping pong with them.
Ping pong?
Yeah. Haven't you seen the Bruce Lee playing ping pong with the nunchucks thing, the viral commercials and stuff?
Oh, you're right. Oh, yeah. That was actually like killer production on that, too. I remembered seeing that. That was really good.
I get it there. And they look flashy and they look cool and still hitting people with sticks, regardless of whether it's a big stick or whether it's like two small sticks connected by a chain, or three medium sized sticks connected by two chains, which does exist. I've seen one of those. Really hard to wield. I tried to use one of those one time, beat the shit out of myself.
That's a bad call.
I get it. It's still sticks hitting people. That's great. But like sticks hitting people instead of swish, swish, stab. You know what I'm saying?
Leo's the only one who actually has a traditional ninja weapon. I don't know if you know about this, but all the rest of those weapons are for gardening, and they were utilized. They were reutilized as weapons when I believe there was a feudal Japan takeover And those and traditional weapons were outlawed. So the farmers themselves learned how to use those weapons and develop their own fighting styles with them. And that's how they became weapons. The size, the nunchucks, everything like that. That's how that worked.
Just so we're clear, one of the main functions of a sai is to basically trap an opponent's sword and break it.
Yes, that's the purpose.
It's not the only thing it does. You can still, it's still got a pointy end, so you can still stab people with it. Mm-hmm. But the real point of it is a defensive weapon to, it's basically a sword breaker. And those are useful as an offhand weapon. If you are doing a two-weapon fighting style, a sword breaker is a useful offhand weapon.
Yeah.
But to have to carry two of them as your main weapon, unless you're regularly fighting people with swords, which during that feudal Japanese time, they actually were regularly fighting people with swords. Mm-hmm. So it was very useful. Mm-hmm. If they were fighting, for instance, samurai, it was a very useful thing to be able to break the samurai's sword, because that's enough to almost make the samurai kill themselves. And I'm not, that's not even hyperbole. That's literally enough.
No, yeah.
To make
if your sword gets broken, you're a failure.
My sword is broken. I'm going to use my smaller version of a sword to literally cut a hole in my stomach and let my guts spill out.
Yeah.
That's what would happen. So in that sense, totally useful and totally a good weapon.
What's really funny is they were just used for aeration. That was their point. Yeah. You stabbed the ground with them. Nunchucks were essentially used to, I don't know. I think it's called shucking. I can't remember what the name of it is. You take the chain and you wrap it around a stalk of rice and you pull the rice right off the stalk in a swift motion. That's the point. You take the two sticks, you wrap the stalk of rice, and then you just, and you take the rice right off the stalk. That's what it's for harvesting rice.
That's just, I will applaud.
Sounds lame, doesn't it? Yeah.
This rice harvesting tool, if I fling it about like this, I can hit people with it.
Yeah, that's creative.
They won't know. It's like, I don't know if you, everybody's familiar with Jackie Chan, of course.
Yeah.
He is an international superstar.
Yeah.
What most people are less familiar with is the actor Sammo Hung, who was trained at the same Chinese opera that Jackie Chan was trained at.
Yes.
And has a very similar fighting style, as well as being twice the size of Jackie Chan. And I don't mean like taller.
Yeah, no, he's just a big guy. But he's a big fat dude. Fucking athletic. He's ridiculous.
Oh, he can tumble and move all over the damn place. Jackie Chan movies, and he had his own TV series here in the United States for a while.
Yeah.
And the dude, just like Jackie Chan, did combat that was part comedy, part combat. And one of the biggest features of that is using unusual weapons. And they're asking him about it in this TV series that he was in. He was basically a cop on loan from China in America, and the American cops were having to get used to him. Basically, the plot of Rush Hour in a TV series, even before Rush Hour actually came out.
That sounds fantastic.
He's, you know, shown them a little bit of the martial arts stuff he knows how to do, and they're questioning his ability. He's like, yeah, I can basically use anything as a weapon. And they hand him like a dry eraser from a dry erase board. Here, use that as a weapon. He proceeds to beat the crap out of, like, not badly, but beat up two different people with the dry erase eraser. And they're all like, yeah, okay, you can use anything that you want to as a weapon. That's just funny ass stuff.
That's fantastic.
Anyway, we're straying from the point, which is the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah. Okay. So
we're still talking martial arts here, but we're talking the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
So the comic book exists, and of course, to capitalize on the comic book, we eventually do have the movies. But we have the series comes before the movies, doesn't it? The animated series
comes before the movies. But before the animated series, actually, what happens is that Mirage Studios gets hit up by Playmates Toys, and they're like, "We want to make a toy line," and so they make a toy line. And one of the first runs of the toy line, or not a run, but like one of the prototypes was the red bandanas and then switching with weapons. And they find out that nobody could tell the difference between them. So the toy line colorized the headbands.
So it's the toy line that did it.
It's the toy line that did it. And now they're like, okay, we've got these toys based on this comic book, but the comic book is super, super adult, super fucked up. It's like crazy violent. Well, we can sell this concept, so we need to create a cartoon series. And that's the purpose of the cartoon series. They created the toy line first, and then it's very similar to He-Man, except the fact that He-Man was based on Conan, a Conan toy line. They made the toy line, and then they had to make a series to sell the toy line. So a lot of the time, when you look at the old He-Man cartoons, they're not written very well. But there was a universe, sort of. There was very loose continuity. Yeah. But with what they did with the TMNT series, that's where things got different, and that's why it was so appealing to me. Okay, and I'll get into that. But essentially, what happened was the cartoon series was started. What's up?
So we're gonna get into that. We've given you some background, right? We're good with the background at this point.
I think a little bit. Yeah, I can put a little bit into the back end of the episode for sure. Like I've got a lot to still talk about.
What I'd say here is this is a good time for us to take a break.
Yeah, good call.
We'll take a break here.
Okay.
And when we come back in, let's talk about how. Let's talk about more of what you got from this documentary and what your personal take on all this is, okay?
For sure.
So we'll be back in just a moment.
All right.
Hey, friends, this is Mike from the Xennial Chronicles reminding you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N, to keep up to date on all things TXC. And please check out our official website, thezennialchronicles.com, or if that's too much to type, zenchron.com. Thanks again for listening, and now back to the show.
And we are back. All right, now normally, I try not to use, I try to use idioms as much as I possibly can because they're fun. But this is one I've never used.
Uh-huh.
They did some country song on it. I think it's a really bad idea to let anyway, I'm about to get myself in dangerous territory. The idiom of Jesus take the wheel. You know, there's the country song.
Right. About it. Yeah.
In situations. Well, I'm going to change that up a little bit here and go, Mikey, take the wheel.
Okay. All right. Let's get into the meat and potatoes of this. All right. So we know the cartoon series started to sell.
I like meat and potatoes.
Me too. Yeah,
Where's the meat and potatoes?
Right here, buddy. Let's go. So, all right. So this cartoon series, we know it was established to sell a toy line that's based on a comic book line. We know that part. Okay. So
Here's
the deal. The first TMNT went through a total, that 87 series went through a total of eight total seasons. They had
really?
Eight seasons. Yeah. I didn't know that until recently, until I saw this video that we're talking about. It went through eight total seasons. And by the way, I have the entire series on DVD. And it made me want to binge it just to be like, what happened? What is this guy talking about? So basically,
I mean, you often see in TV series different changes and things. Sometimes certain series don't really hit their stride till about halfway through the first season. Some of them don't even fully hit it till the end of the first season and going into the second, because they're still trying to find out which niche market they fit in.
Yeah.
The only thing I've seen that's not been that way in recent history has actually been the newer Marvel series that they're doing on the Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Because the way they have those set up, they're almost like long movies cut up into like 45-minute segments.
Okay.
And so they are really well put together and they hit their stride almost immediately.
Yeah.
And you know what they're doing almost immediately. And there's none of that growth and that we have to figure out what type of series we are. But
no, they know, yeah, and they also have continuity in mind as well. This is a big deal.
Oh, basically all of those are setting up the next phase of what's going to happen in all the Marvel stuff. So that shit is planned out to the T. But when you're launching a cartoon to sell these toys, you only have so much in mind to start with, and part of it's going to be how well do the toys sell, which we've talked about that and how the original toy lines came out and your experience going and buying those original toy lines for the TMNT, but you have those changes that are going to happen.
Yes.
So, yeah.
All right. So, here's what's going on. So the series is very fresh. They're just starting things out. What they do with their first season run, a lot of the time, the first season of a cartoon series is you don't want to invest too much into it. You want to create a few different episodes. You want to create a slight bit of continuity, but the purpose of the first season of most cartoon series is a pilot. So instead of having a one episode pilot, you have to have the first season.
Two or three.
Yeah, at least a few, right? Just to get things going. But three is too little. Two is too little. But one is definitely too little. But even, you don't want to do 10 episodes of a first season with a cartoon series.
Not necessarily. No.
Right. Not most of the time. Especially in this time frame. Because again, they want to know if the toy line is going to sell. That's their point. So they split it at five for the first season. right?
Okay.
So for the first season of TMNT, it's a total of 5 episodes, and they hired one animation company, and they hired all the voice actors to get it going, okay? 5 episodes is very easy to write a story arc with, because you've only got 5 episodes. So you're introducing the characters, you're introducing the universe, and you're creating the major plot line to how everything is going to go from that point on, right?
Yeah, and if you figure you only have about in a normal half hour cartoon episode, you're only going to have about 20 to 22 minutes of actual and if you consider credits, about 20 minutes of actual story time that you need to work through.
Yeah.
So if you're making 5 20-minute episodes, you're looking at 100 minutes right there.
Yeah.
That's
about a feature length movie worth of content.
Hour and a half, hour and 40 minutes of content. So yeah, it's a typical animated feature length movie would run about an hour, 40 minutes.
Exactly. So. Now in this 5 episode story arc, they introduce a ton of things that people are very familiar with. They introduce the backstory of Splinter and Shredder. They introduce the Turtles, how they mutated. They introduce Baxter Stockman and his Mausers. They introduce the Technodrome, Krang, all of this stuff. And
they had Krang that early?
Yes, he's in the first season. Not only that, they also introduced
Krang came until later.
No, he's in the first season. They introduced Krang, and he's out of he doesn't have a body until the last episode of the first season.
So he's just a talking brain sitting around.
He's a talking brain sitting around going, Shredder, why the hell have you not built me a body yet? I can't do anything here. I've been banished from my dimension, Dimension X. I'm completely powerless. You're trying to take care of these asshole turtles. Give me a body. I'll do it for you. Come the fuck on. Like, let's go. Like, that was...
Let's just add on to the fact that, like you said, the comic books had a lot of bizarre things in it. Just the premise of the TV show. Here's a bunch of mutant turtles.
Yes.
Mutant turtles taught martial arts by a mutant rat.
Yes.
Who are fighting against a dude dressed like a cheese grater.
Yep.
Literally. Who is working for an extra dimensional being.
Yes.
And has a bunch of robots as his army.
He's got
imagine a kid.
By the way, this guy creates his own mutants from a rhinoceros and a warthog that he steals from a zoo.
Is that the first season too?
Yes.
Is that in the first season?
Yes. That's and it's
Bebop
by the way,
and Rocksteady are in the first season. Something I thought came later.
No, this is establishment of the universe. Yeah.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy? Bebop and Rocksteady are in like the second episode or the third episode. He's like, we've got mutant humanoid turtles. I need mutant humanoids. Hey, gang members that I sent to go fuck up the reporter that you guys completely failed at. You need more power. I need volunteers. Come here. He straps him to a table and he exposes him to the mutagen with the warthog and the rhinoceros and creates Bebop and Rocksteady in the second episode. It's great. But this is all done by one animation company where everything happens. Like, it's not only feature, like, there's so much that happens. It moves so fast. It keeps your attention. It's so well put together. It's so well formulated. It keeps all of your attention. The only problem that I have is I think what they did, when you watch the series, you'll realize there's a third episode that's just got so much animation continuity errors. And I'm talking like the wrong voice is speaking for the wrong turtle or the wrong paint job is being used for XYZ. It's also very goofy. It's also like very different. And the script is very loose in comparison to every other episode. So I think what happened was I think they produced 4 episodes. Oh, by the way, this also introduces the turtle van and the turtle blimp. And it's made from spare parts in Baxter Stockman's apartment. This is all done in the first 5 episodes. There's so much that happens. And it's great. It's so good because it's so well put together. The third episode,
I'm telling you right now, when you see adaptations of these long-running series like this, long-running animated series, when those are adapted into film series, or into just a single film, sometimes you hear the stories about how they had to pare down how many things they added in, and when they do add in too many new characters within the span of a single movie, it's talked about, oh, this is why this movie didn't do good, because they added in too many new things. You can only add in so many villains at a time.
Yeah.
You can only add in so many different new elements at a time before you're adding in too many things. And it's like, you know, the question's got, why did they do this and this? Why didn't they just stick with the one? One would have been enough for the story. And yet in this 5-episode run, which again is the length of a feature film if you're watching it, mm-hmm. they introduce all of these various things, and we accept it because it's broken up into individual episodes.
Yeah.
But it's impossible for us to accept in a movie version where you have to take 5 films until sometimes your favorite villain is introduced into the series, or taken, you know, and used appropriately in the series.
Yeah.
I mean, I got lucky in the 2 terrible G.I. Joe movies, and sadly both of them really weren't that good. they introduced my favorite G.I. Joe Cobra person in the first movie, and they had huge parts in the second movie.
Yeah.
But that's because my favorites are the best of G.I. Joe and Cobra. Period.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, that's for anybody that doesn't know who the best are, because they are the best. That's Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow.
Yep.
They're the best.
Yep.
Now, the real question is, which one's my actual favorite? I'm going to let you guess on that one.
My personal favorite was Snake Eyes.
Snake Eyes. Silent. No, not Snake Eyes.
So Storm Shadow's
okay. The bomb. Storm Shadow is awesome. And by the way, let's be clear, Storm Shadow does join the Joes at some point later.
Oh, that's cool.
Always working for
Cobra. I haven't seen the updated movies either. So.
Snake Eyes did not do all the bad things he thinks Snake Eyes did. He actually ends up joining, which is part of the comic line of things. He actually ends up joining the Joes in the comics at one point.
Hell yeah.
And in the toy line, he joins the Joes. He is part of their ninja group.
Yes.
But anyway.
Actually, Snake Eyes was... There was an NES game, a G.I. Joe. There were a couple of G.I. Joe NES games that were fun as shit, by the way. They were made so well. And Snake Eyes is a playable character. Actually, part of what you do is you flip between different Joes to tackle certain parts and pieces, like a certain Joe's ability is required for this part of a level, and then you have to flip to another one that does this, or this one's stronger against a certain boss. It's great. Like, the tactical part of it is fantastic. So, okay, but getting back to it, we're not talking about that.
Yes.
So this first season is so well put together, right? Well, they didn't realize that this was blowing the hell up, and they had 4 episodes, I believe, that were produced, and then what is considered episode 3 was one that was developed later. So they write the 4 episodes. This thing is kicking ass, right? And then for story continuity, they had to shoehorn the 3rd episode in, which was a loose script that was not very... It was like, you could tell the elements were being introduced, but the execution of the script and the animation is completely different from the other 4 episodes in the first season. Like, they shoehorned it in the middle because they're like, we need one, so throw it in there, right? Still the same animation company, but it was much more lazily done. So they get the 5 episodes done. This thing is blowing the hell up. They're like, oh, God, we can't keep up with it. It's everywhere. It's become a cultural phenomenon.
People wanting to wear the kids wanting to wear the costumes. Toys selling all over the place.
You got video games starting to come out. You've got, it's nuts. So it's become a cultural phenomenon.
Video games that, by the way, will haunt your memory forever. I'm looking at you, underwater level. I'm looking at you.
Right? So they get a call for, okay, guys, we got to do a second season. Okay, well, we've only got 5. What do? Get all the voice actors. We're doing 13 episodes. And you have to crank them out in the same year. Okay. So they got... So now it starts to back off in production value a little bit. Okay. They start doing another 13 episodes, and so you have an 18 total episode story arc. Things start to continue. You still have some continuity going on. There's a lot more animation. Like, I'm starting to get into the second season. I'm watching it. There's a lot more animation errors. There's a lot more continuity issues, stuff like that. But things are working. Things are still kind of working. They're putting everything together. And then what happens is... They're like, okay, guys, this is, and by the end of the second season, this is a full fucking blowout, right? It is everywhere. They're talking about doing movies. They're talking about doing all this shit, right? So, by the way, 1989 hits and the Batman movie comes out, right? So we're like a year or two into this continuity. TMNT is full bore. They have to do a third season. They're like, well, we need to get ourselves up in episodes so that we can syndicate this and run it weekly. And we've got to deal with Fox Kids now. So now we're running them 5 days a week. Guys, we need 43 more episodes for the third season.
Jeez.
Yeah. So they're like, what? So this is where things start to fall apart when it comes down to animation continuity. Okay. And there's all of these influences that are coming in and they are outsourcing to a bajillion animation companies. Voice actors can't make their schedule. So now they're swapping voice actors by the third season. They're swapping all this kind of stuff. Everything is going nuts. And there's a lot of argument as to when the series, quote unquote, died. A lot of people think that the series died in the second season where things started getting a little batshit. A lot of people think the series died in the seventh or eighth season when it just fell apart. And I remember when, and this is the point where I'm getting at, okay? So as things are starting to move along, there's other things that continue to happen. More characters are introduced to sell more toys and more. You got the movies are starting to come out now. You got the first Batman movie comes out. And then there's another, you know, set of seasons. It starts to taper off in number of episodes because there's more concentration on more things. The movies start coming out. Video games are coming out. All of this stuff. There's the arcade stuff. Like, you're concentrating more on, you're selling fucking blankets and sheet sets and costumes and you know, posters and all of this shit that's just permeating. Like, I was one of those kids. I had a costume. I had the good costume too. The one with the full size shell. I had the bandana went around my face. I even bought a rubber mask another year afterwards. Like,
I hate you.
You hate me because of how I was deep into this, dude.
I hate you. I've told you this story before, but I'm gonna tell it again because how much of you remember.
Okay.
But yes, I was one of the kids that wanted to dress as a Ninja Turtle for Halloween too.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And the only costume that my parents could afford and find for me to dress as a Ninja Turtle was one of the really, really bad pullover masks. One of the really bad rubber masks.
Oh, the rubber one?
And the only one they could find was a Raphael mask. So,
well, that was the red one, was the universal color.
Yeah. So they got me that mask.
Uh-huh.
And they were they got me that mask, but they couldn't get me any of the other pieces for it, including weapons, no nothing else. So my family at that time weren't necessarily the best on cash, so affording things was very difficult.
Yeah.
So this is what they came up with. I wore a pair of green sweatpants. Over those green sweatpants, I wore a pair of sweat shorts that were a different color green.
Okay.
Darker green.
Okay.
Green long sleeve shirt. My dad took a pillow. Safety pin the pillow to the back of my shirt, safety pin a green towel over the pillow, took cardboard and cut out size from cardboard, and then I had the mask. That was my Ninja Turtle costume.
I want to say this,
fantastic job of my dad doing the best that he could with what limited resources we had at that time to try to make the costume as much as possible. But little young version of me just like, as everybody was laughing at me for my homemade Ninja Turtle
that
costume.
Sucks,
again,
dude.
Now looking back as an adult, I'm like, hey, my dad did the very best that he could in that situation to try to give me the best setup as possible. So thank you for that, Dad.
I will tell you,
but
this
younger,
like,
me, younger current, me was not saying thank you, Dad. Younger
I will tell you this current unhappy. Modern day shit like that kind of stuff, if somebody were to show up at a con dressed up like that, they would get mad respect from everyone, even the top-level cosplayers.
But they would now, but back then, that was just like...
No, as a kid,
the worst awful thing to ever have happen. I wanted to be a Ninja Turtle, and I'm not.
And, I can understand that being
Now I can look back. Now I can look back and be like, you know what? That was pretty awesome, because I'm the only Ninja Turtle that looked like that. nobody else did.
Yeah, nobody else did. Nobody made it. Nobody made the costume. They bought the thing off. I had the costume that was bought off the line. You know, like that's the thing is there was not really a lot of uniqueness. I had a ton of fun. There was not a lot of uniqueness to what I did. There's a ton of it to what you did. I think that's awesome. I think that's badass. And I think that your dad definitely deserves serious recognition for putting that together. Your parents, they do.
So dad, if you're listening to this, Mike loves your Ninja Turtle costume for me. If you even
Absolutely.
Remember the old Ninja Turtle costume for
Absolutely.
Me, Mike loves it. Mike thinks it's awesome. And again, now I can look back and say, my dad did the damn best he could and he did a good job.
He did a damn good job. That sounds like,
Because I was just a shallow little kid then.
Right.
But now I can say, dad, you worked your ass off for it. So thank you for
Hell
that.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for that.
That's
but,
great.
But no, you're okay. Right. It permeated everything. I didn't have very many of the Ninja Turtle toys. I had a cousin who was like, that cousin had everything. Every Ninja Turtle toy humanly possible. Maybe it's a redhead thing. I don't know. But anyway, he had every Ninja Turtle toy that you could possibly have.
Yeah.
And so when I go over his house and be at his house, that's that was the only time I really played with the Ninja Turtle toys. I played some of the video games, obviously.
Yeah.
The old NES one. Yeah, the old NES one with the awful water level that just sucked. And then the ones on the Turtles in Time. I that's one of those early games that you could play with somebody else and you know beat relatively easily and then play on different difficulty levels afterwards.
Yeah.
And I did pretty good on that game with one of my buddies playing that game. That was a lot of fun. But it was everywhere. It was every part of culture. And you're right in bringing up Batman because Batman helped to really kick off the revival of comic book movies. Superman tried to do it, but it was still right. Superman. That's always been a product that can always make money, but Batman had a little more of a niche appeal at that time than what Superman did. And the tone of that movie was also a different tone than the Superman movie. Superman's always been approachable by everybody, but Batman is much more, there's a lot more darkness to it, especially Tim Burton's take. There was a lot of darkness to it. Especially for that time. Now it doesn't look that way with all the kind of gritty adaptations that we have, gritty real world adaptations of comics that we have now.
Yeah.
But back then, that Batman was dark and gritty.
Not only that
thing was like, go ahead. Yes.
I was going to say, you're dead on. Here's the thing about that Batman series and why it was so influential. Okay. So moving back to the TMNT series for a quick second, because I intentionally mentioned that Batman. So the TMNT series, when it hit that next few years later, we had 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 seasons of TMNT. And the final season of TMNT is absolutely different from every other season. That was the Saturday morning cartoon that was coming out in like 91, 92. It was still going, by the way, for like 3 or 4 years. It went for a long time. Now, that version of TMNT, I thought it was a reboot. It wasn't. It's still part of the 1987 series continuity, technically speaking. Yes. Here's what they did. They're still trying to sell toy lines. The movies are out there, right? And so they have,
which, by the way, in comparison to, say, the Batman movie and even Batman Returns, which was the second one within the Burton universe of Batman movies.
Yes.
Even compared to those two, which had some campy elements, especially the second one, had some campy elements. When you hire the actors that you do to play the parts that they play, you're going to get something campy happening anyway.
Yeah.
I'm speaking of Christopher Walken and Danny DeVito basically just chewing scenery,
for
amazingly,
sure. Yeah.
But still chewing scenery and noses the entire time.
Well said. Well said.
But comparatively, the movie versions of TMNT were the first one was had a little bit of darkness to it, but the second one, I mean, just the opening of the second one kind of showed you there was going to be a lot more lightness to the story,
right?
And the way they handled the their mutant ally or mutant enemies with Toka and Rezar,
yeah,
completely different setup to what you got out of the Batman movies. Even then, darker, more brooding. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movies, definitely, especially the second one, more kid friendly, more approachable.
Yes.
And then by the time you get to the third one, do we even talk about the third one?
The third one doesn't exist.
Talk about anymore?
Nope. Third one doesn't exist. Yeah. No. No.
But I kind of like the third one though.
There, I have a copy of the third one, but to be completely honest, everybody considers that essentially non-canonical.
Okay, I didn't know. Being not the turtle lore person,
yeah,
I didn't know what the feelings about that are.
Dude, I had the movie, but I also had the comic book adaptation of that movie, which, by the way, is better than the movie.
Interestingly, it would be about the same time frame. I had the comic book adaptation of the movie Hook.
That's cool.
And the comic book adaptation of that was actually way better than the movie. There was a couple extra plot lines, and I don't know if I may still have it hidden in my comic book stuff somewhere.
Oh my gosh.
But it was pretty darn good, pretty darn faithful, but at the same time, the stuff that it added was so much better, much more richness to the story.
Yeah, that's amazing.
But anyway, so Turtles 3, not considered a
Turtles 3, not good, movie, but still. Yeah. And the films were, yeah, they, the first film was far
darker.
Just like how
we don't acknowledge, Batman and Robin at all.
Right. Exactly. The 90s, the early to mid 90s for films and comic book movies is just a bad, bad time.
Because I will always acknowledge Batman Forever. Because I love that Batman, and I will.
No, I agree with you on that. I agree with you on that.
That's still
technically part of the Burton verse, too, isn't it?
Three or four times.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's technically part of that, and I've seen it three or four times. Technically, because of the fact that you have the same character playing Commissioner Gordon and Alfred and Robin in Batman and Robin, that's still part of the Burton verse. But again, we just pretend like that one doesn't exist.
Yeah, that's like the TMNT 3 of the Batman movies.
George Clooney and Joel Schumacher pretend that doesn't exist as well. So we're all good.
Yeah.
The movies for TMNT have always been a little bit more lighthearted than what, say, the Batman movies were. But something different about this eighth season of the series?
Yes. Okay. So the different thing about this eighth season of the series is it's on the heels of the TMNT film that came out. It's also very much on the heels of, as a matter of fact, before I get into it, they changed the theme of the TMNT theme song. The TMNT theme song does not exist in the eighth season, like the Chuck Lorre written TMNT theme that everybody remembers.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, yep. Heroes in a Half Shell.
Yeah, Heroes in a Half Shell is not part of it anymore. It's a whole different theme song. They're interspersing film footage with the cartoon series because they want to associate it with the darker tone of the first film, right?
Okay.
And I think
the first film was darker than the second and non-existent third film. But
yeah.
It still was a little lighter than kind of the Batman stuff. But yeah, it definitely had a darker feel to it. Darker everything, lighting, everything was just. Yeah, a lot more.
Yeah, everything was completely. Well, it was also drawn. That film is drawn from literally the first comic book where they kill the Shredder and like all that kind of stuff. That storyline is drawn straight from that, and then they interweave a couple of things from some of the other comics. You know, familiar characters that are also in the cartoon series. They do that, and they do it extremely well. But
there's some dark moments in that movie.
Moving on, what they do is they take the influence of that film and they try to apply it to the cartoon series in the final season. Okay. A lot happens. Shredder is no longer in the series. They're introducing a monster of the week every single episode, and they are jumping the shark all the time. But one of the major things that they're doing is they're trying to darken the tone. The sky is not blue at all anymore. Everything takes place at night. The sky has this dangerous red hue to it. The turtles are redrawn to more closely resemble the film turtles, where you can, you know, see their pupils a little bit more. The eyes are drawn where the masks are obvious. Like there's like this green, like you can see the green skin where the eyes separate from Like you could see the eyes distinguish themselves from where they are in the mask rather than the eyes more so being the part of the mask. All the same voice actors are pretty much there, but there's less episodes written and there's also less, there's no jokiness anymore. All of the fun, campy, goofy part of it where it was, by the way, in those seasons between 3 and 7, they just upped the goof factor really, really bad, right? It just became so bad that it just became a bad parody of itself. In that season 3 to season 7 arc. So they tried to bring it back, but they didn't bring it back to the origin. They brought it to the film continuity. And the reason why they did it is because there was another cartoon series that came out that was very dark, that was very muted, that was very film noir based. And it was also associated with the Batman movie series and the Burtonverse. The Batman animated series came out around that time, 1991. And it changed the way that cartoon series based upon comic books were viewed by what you could do with a syndicated cartoon series, how successful that it was. It just completely it completely changed the game. And so at that point, now TMNT is trying to capitalize on the darkness and the fact that their audience has quote-unquote grown up, but they're doing it, and they're also trying to appeal to new kids, and they're trying to sell toys, and they're trying to do all these things way too much.
Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so it's all this. They're doing too many, they're spinning too many plates. They're not giving a shit about continuity anymore. They're trying to stay dark. They're trying to sell more toys. More toys are still coming out, but it's starting to fail, and it's starting to crash and burn. And so what they do is the toy line is essentially still working, but what they do is they shift their continuity, or they shift their focus to the films, right? And if you remember, like, the popularity of the TMNT started to crash and burn after about that 10-year span. You know, by 1996, 97, it was done.
Yeah, for the most part, yeah. It was just something that it was already starting to become like a retro 80s.
Yeah, it turned into this, like, within that, I want to say it was about 7 or 8 years, I think, that it lasted. The third TMNT movie came out, it bombed hard, it was out on video like 3 weeks after it was out in the theaters, because nobody saw it. All of this, I've remembered seeing that as a kid going, holy shit, it's already out on film, it just came out in the theater, what the hell? or it's out on home video, it just came out in the theater, whatever. So essentially, this is the part where things start to just die off. And the thing is, though, is the continued devolution of the TMNT series and how it worked reminded me of something as I'm watching this video. It reminded me how when I was a few, 2-3 years into wanting to watch this stuff. Now, my grandma had bought, she was my catalyst for the TMNT toys, man. She helped me get, she bought all of the things. We would go to Kmart and she's like, you got $5 to buy a toy. Every time we went to Kmart. When I was a kid, and it was always spent on some Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle figure. I had all four of the turtles. I had Splinter. I don't think I ever bought Shredder because I think Shredder was a bit more expensive. But, you know, I had the Mecha Turtle, and I ended up having, you know, a lot of the Foot Soldier. I had a Foot Soldier. I never, you know, because I always had only $5. I never got the van. I never got the play sets. I never got those. But I always had the figures, and I loved the figures back in the day. But one of the things I remember doing when I was a kid is I remember watching when I was at my grandma's house, Saturday mornings, the TMNT show would come on, and I would watch it, and I would remember those times when it just didn't feel the same. It didn't feel the same to me. But what it made me want to do is it made me want to go back and watch that first season worth of episodes. I had 2 tapes. There were 6 episodes on them. One of them was from the second season, wasn't that great. But I had those 5 episodes from that first season on VHS. And I remembered watching the cartoon series as it aired on TV with the newer episodes. And things were okay. They were enjoyable, but it didn't feel the same. The animation, I could tell the animation was goofy. All the voice acting was goofy. It was just weird. It was so off-putting to me. I didn't like it anymore. It just sounded odd. It looked odd, like... It didn't feel like the Ninja Turtles that I remembered back in the day when I first experienced it. So every time when I would go and watch one of those episodes, it would make me miss the original episodes. I would go back in my grandmother's room and grab that VHS tape and pop it in, and I would watch those, and I would remember how good the animation was, how the story felt. It was like, and I would be in there for another hour and a half, and I would watch those episodes. But it wasn't, it was partly because I had seen a new episode and wanted to watch them again, but it was really because I missed how good those were. And I was like 7 or 8 years old and going, man, this is, that doesn't feel like Ninja Turtles to me. This feels like it to me.
So you basically, you're already at one of those every time a new adaptation of something comes out, all the way back when you were 7 or 8 years old, man.
Yeah. I was watching this and going, it feels, yeah, I was a snob. I was a cartoon snob, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, like
cartoon snob. No, I get what you're feeling. I can say that when I went and saw, being the Star Wars lover that I am, when I went and saw episodes 1, 2, and 3 in the theater, one, not that much, actually. I'm an outlier. I actually really liked episode 1 and still have a lot of love for episode 1. There's literally the only parts of episode 1 I don't like are literally anything with Jar Jar Binks and and the mention of midichlorians. Beyond that, I like episode 1 still. It's episode 2 and episode 3 that I just absolutely cannot stand.
Oh, episode three was actually just a dumpster fire. I hated episode three.
Actually, there's a, I know of a way to make episode 3 palatable to you, but it requires like 2 weeks of nonstop binging.
Oh.
2 weeks of nonstop binging, and then episode 3 becomes palatable to you.
Interesting. Okay? You're watching.
You need to.
You're talking. Watching
you need to
the
watch
series.
The Clone Wars.
Yeah,
the Clone you need Wars to watch series. The Clone Wars animated series. And actually, what's funny about that is there are different things that I watch that are Star Wars related that make me want to go back to the original films. When I watched Episode 2 and Episode 3 in the theater, I wanted to go back and watch the original films again because I wanted to know what Star Wars really felt like.
Yeah.
Episode 1 gave me some of that feeling, but the Episode 2 and 3 did not feel like Star Wars, and I needed to feel like Star Wars.
Yeah.
I personally did not have that same feeling with episodes 7, 8, and 9. I really liked those.
I did too.
Eight at first, and over multiple watchings of 8, I have grown to really, really love episode 8.
Uh-huh.
For all the reasons that everybody else hates episode 8, because they don't want to see. I don't want to see a Luke Skywalker that's bitter and doesn't want to be involved in anything. Don't you remember what a whiny little bitch he was? Of course, he's going to be bitter when shit doesn't work out the way he wants it to. That's exactly the character arc that he's going to follow.
That's super well done.
I love Mark Hamill, and I understand at first he didn't want to play Luke that way because Luke's everybody's hero. But be honest, this is exactly what he would have turned into. Because this is what exactly so many people have turned into, because the shit didn't work out the way that they wanted. And so they get bitter about it.
Yeah.
And they have to be prepared for the next generation to take care of it.
Yeah.
And yes, the ending of episode 9 has its issues and its flaws, but it still felt like Star Wars to me. And even some of the new series, the Mandalorian series, wasn't Star Wars, but it had the same kind of awe and still gave the same feeling that I got out of Star Wars. In fact, sometimes even more so. So I get it. Some of the things give it to you, some of the things don't. Just quick question to ask. Have the new movies or any of the new series, have you watched any of them, and have you felt like any of them give you that same feeling that the first 5 episodes, that first season gave you?
Absolutely not. There was a CGI one that I dug that had Patrick Stewart in it, and I actually like that. Is okay, so that's part of the actual TMNT movie continuity, so all of the people in the all the characters in that, that's supposed to take place, the TMNT movie that came out that was all CGI, that's the same characters in the same film continuity. As it's technically TMNT 4, it's just CGI done. And that one I kind of liked because it delves into that sci-fi interdimensional time travel type thing going on, right? Ancient beings, and it's very mystical. There's part fantasticalism, there's a big sci-fi element to it. They introduced that into a much more basic setup where they didn't introduce Krang or anything like that. Now the films themselves, the newer ones, like the Michael Bay ones, no. Yeah. I watched that first one. I have a slight bit of curiosity about the second one. I haven't watched it yet. I don't think I have it, but I don't even think I have the first one. I watched it. I think I streamed it, and it was okay.
It wasn't great. The second one, I think there's some aspects of it that you might like. They do bring in Bebop and Rocksteady, I believe, in the second one. Or are they in the first
one? No, I think they're in the second one, because they're not in the first one.
They bring in Bebop and Rocksteady, and they do have live-action actors that get turned into them, and then they do the voices and the and some of the mocap, and they're insane. They bring in Casey Jones, and he's actually done fairly well.
Really? Because I don't know, because Elias Koteas was a high bar.
Oh, no. Elias Koteas was amazing. It's the guy who's who's the Green Arrow in the Arrow TV series.
Really?
In the DC Universe. Yeah, he's Stephen Amell.
Okay.
Yeah, he's Casey Jones. So he's pretty good. He can play that kind of serious thing. And I mean, again, yeah, Elias Koteas is still Elias Koteas.
Yeah.
And if he's, by the way, anybody listening that doesn't know Elias Koteas as an actor, just go and look at everything that he's done. Go back to look at like The Prophecy, which is one of the first real starring roles that he has.
Yeah.
And then just marvel at all of the amazing actors in there, and stick around till the end when Lucifer makes his appearance and realize who the hell Lucifer is and be like, oh my God, are you serious? That's Lucifer. And he's so amazing.
Yeah.
So amazing. And especially if you know him from the other things that, that he's done, specifically the big trilogy of movies that he was like one of the main stars of, and was a watershed moment in his career where he basically embodies that character for all time.
Wow.
And then watch him being Lucifer. And it's like, dude, this guy is great. This is an amazing actor. He's one of my favorite actors just because of the juxtaposition of his role as Lucifer in The Prophecy, and then his role in that other thing. I'm not going to say what it is because I want people to have the surprise.
Okay.
You don't know he's going to be in the movie. He wasn't even a big star at that point in time. And then he's in the movie as Lucifer, and it's like, holy shit, this is awesome.
Okay.
But yes, Elias Koteas set the high bar.
Yeah.
Stephen Amell does a pretty decent job, but they also bring in Krang.
Really?
They bring in Krang, and I believe they even bring in Shredder's daughter in the second.
They bring
one.
In Karai?
I believe so.
But there's
a lot going on in the second movie.
I don't know if the Shredder that's in here. I remember that one of the big things that Michael Bay did with that was that instead of making Shredder a Rokusaki, they made him a white guy who was like a corporate dude or something. Yes. Like that. He was into scientific research, and they changed his name to Eric Sachs, which I thought was creative for, I guess, whitewashing a Japanese character.
There's also the fact that Michael Bay was using William Finster in the role, and you don't waste William Finster when you have
him. Right. So
I still think it's wrong for him to. Yeah, I still think it's wrong to do that, but there's more story on it in the second movie. More
story. Right, because I know that the Shredder shows up. I don't know if it's actually a Rokusaki, though.
I don't remember that much of it, but I will tell you, it's worth watching the second movie just to see how much more they add to the lore. But the fight at the end, man, they're fighting on top of buildings in New York with dimensional portals and shit.
Oh shit.
And jumping from jumping around on floating debris and shit like that. So, you know, they go full bore into it. It's worth the watch, man.
Okay.
Even if it sucks, it's at least worth the watch so that you can give an idea. Since you're so much more versed in the lore, you can give me an idea of how much it connects in. But yeah, they go right into batshit crazy in it.
Okay. So all right.
I think it's worth your time. Maybe worth your time.
Yeah, I think I'm going to check. That's the second one, right? The second Michael Bay one?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So, So I will, okay, you've convinced me. I'm going to check that out. That's pretty cool. The next thing I want to mention, there was a CGI series that actually came out that I was very much a fan of, that I liked. Well, there was also the 2003 animated, hand-drawn animated series, one of the last ones. That one was great. There was actually a crossover with the 1987 TMNT that was done as a feature-length film that was fantastically done. Although they didn't have the original voice actors, there was a CGI series that was done that had a crossover with the original voice actors. But what I liked about there were a lot of things that had to do with time travel, had to do with history, had to do with backstory and lore that was really well done. But one of my favorite little plot twists that they put in to the CGI series. Not the toy. I want to say it was like a 2010, 2011 toy series came out with it concurrently. But Krang were a race of aliens that were brain aliens that had android bodies, but they were called the Krang with two A's. That was, so there were multiples of them. They spoke to each other like androids, and one Krang would call another one Krang. Oh, Krang, what's this? Krang. Oh, yeah, Krang. But, and that was, I thought that was goofy, but at the same time, very creative, because now instead of Krang the one alien, it was the Krang, the race of deadly alien creatures from another dimension. I thought that was actually kind of cool. They were goofy, and they took the place of the foot soldier robots.
So they're basically Daleks from
Doctor Yeah, Who. They're like Daleks. They're Daleks with arms and legs, but yeah, they're Daleks kind of.
I'm sorry, I'd rather have a plunger.
Understood.
But anyway.
Understood.
But anyway, you know, that's again, there's been a lot of iterations of it. I'm glad this one little YouTube video, because YouTube's important, people. I'm glad this one little YouTube video was enough to kind of get you to go through this journey of why you felt that way about certain episodes as a kid, and understand that this is something that, again, is part of this cultural thing. We keep seeing a resurgence and wave of all of these things that were important to us as kids, and the reboots of them, the redos of them, and you always have two different kind of reactions. There's people who like them, and there's people who long and crave for the original version, because that original version sparked something specific within them that made it you know, what it was. And sometimes the nostalgia things get that right, and sometimes they don't, and it just depends on, you know, exactly how they work it.
I will tell you this.
That's funny. You were feeling that as early as 7 or 8, and didn't realize that was kind of the thing you were working through.
Right. To be real, I will say there's a part of me that feels like I thought it was better because it was something that was tied more to me at the time when it became influential, because it was a new awesome thing. It's like hearing your favorite band for the first time, or one of those old albums. Oh man, X band was better when I was in high school. Like, everybody says shit like that because they're like, that's when they discovered music could be what it could be. So everything that they sucked in at that time was just so pivotal to their development. And now bands that come out and do that for other people at a younger age don't do it the same. And so they're not as good. Like, I'm not trying to say things like that. That's not what I mean. Okay.
No, this is about the thing that personally made sense to you. It's like, even, okay, let's use Metallica as the example.
Yeah.
You and I can agree, because that's a band that we definitely share as high on our list.
Yeah.
If not number one on our list. We can use that as a perfect example of, we can agree that there's probably, of all the Metallica albums, we know which one we would probably both rank as the worst of the Metallica albums.
Yes.
Now, I want to keep in mind, the worst Metallica album is still better than the best of some other band's albums.
Yes.
But still, we can agree what the worst one is. Yes. We may not completely agree on which one the best one is.
Yeah.
Although we might, because there is only one correct answer in that. And the answer is Master of Puppets, but whatever. So we do agree on that.
Yes,
but
absolutely.
We can look and say that there's whatever the first album was where you were truly introduced to Metallica, mm-hmm. being a, you know, for you and for me, that album will hold a special place beyond even the other albums for Metallica.
Yes.
Like, I will acknowledge that the best written album for Metallica, the best written, possibly the best produced, is Master of Puppets. It is a masterpiece from start to finish. There's nothing wrong on that album.
Yeah.
However, that's not the album that holds a special place in my heart. The album that holds a special place in my heart is the album Load.
Yes.
And that's because that was my acceptance of Metallica, not my introduction. I had friends who listened to Ride the Lightning when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. And had me listen to Ride the Lightning, and I listened to it, and it was all right. Friends that listened to Master of Puppets, had friends that listened to Justice, had a whole bunch of friends listening to the Black Album when it came out. I was not one of the people that was. I was into pop music at that time. I wasn't into rock and metal and all that at that time. I had friends that were, but and they made me listen to it all the time. But it wasn't my thing. The hardest band that I got into at that time is, I liked a few songs by Guns N' Roses at that time. Yes, I liked Guns N' Roses before I liked Metallica. I freely admit that. I know how amusing you find it. Anybody that knows me, that statement is, but it is the truth.
Yeah.
I liked songs by Guns N' Roses before I liked, I really liked Metallica. And it wasn't until I had gone through, like you say, the high school teenage years of music revelation that the first band to open things up for me in that regard was probably Pearl Jam. But beyond that, when Load came out and I started listening to Load, that was my gateway into Metallica. And then I became the full-blown hardcore Metallica fan that I am today. But, and it was a very quick transition.
Yeah.
But that was the album that did it. And so that one thing, that thing that brings you in will always be the thing that brings you in.
Right. Right. Exactly. Now, I definitely, that's kind of half of what I have a point with this, with that, that's half of what I have. Cause it is definitely partially the exposure to it, how it's introduced to you has a special place in your heart. And that's where the first season has a special place in my heart. Right. But I will state this, I am, one of the things I noticed, one of the things that I liked was the fact that it was a full story across those five episodes, right?
Yeah.
That was a big deal to me. It was, you felt like there was a full completion, and then it was also opening for something more. It was the open-ended part of all of it, right? I loved all of that. I loved how good it was and how well it was put together. And then when you start watching the next bit of it, that continuity starts to go away. And then when you get a few years into it, it's just completely batshit. It's absolutely crazy. But I will say that my favorite part about it is my argument for art versus commercialism is where I sit. Because it was, when the first season was made, the people that were producing the series were caring about it. They really... It was something that they enjoyed. They weren't doing it as a job. They were doing it because they grabbed people that were good at what they did. They had writers and storyboard artists and everyone that was involved in making this the best it could possibly be at that point. And that's what true art actually is. When an artist puts something together, they don't put it together because they're slapping it together and then sending it off to somebody. They pour their hearts into it. They make it fit. They make it theirs. They make sure that their name is all over it. They make sure that the quality is as top as it could be at the time that they could put that out. And you can see that. You can see that in the absolute first season. And it's after that, literally the first episode of the second season, it is like a complete 180 shift. They are cranking it out as quickly as they possibly can now, because now they've done something so great that they can't keep up with it. And rather than put the money into making sure it's amazing, and by the way, like, there's continuity shifts that happen even in the Batman animated series that I'm talking about too. Great stories, fantastic voice acting, wonderful writing. I don't think, personally, there is a bad episode in any of the Batman series when it comes down to that. Animation continuity is definitely a big deal, though. You can see it. And the difference is with the TMNT stuff is they poured continuity completely out. There are badly written episodes. You can tell there are certain writers that just didn't know what the fuck they were doing. And as the name started to change and continuity starts to shift, it falls apart. But that first season shows you that this is what, to me, that's what art feels like. It was made to sell a product, but it was also made because people were trying to make it as good as they possibly could at that time. That's what mattered. And so that's what sticks with me more than anything, watching it as an adult pushing 40, right? Like, you can see that in the detail. And as somebody who's been involved in making and creating media, there is a certain level of recognition to that. And I think it's worth noting.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Here's what I would say for everybody who's listening, just to kind of maybe think about, just a, you know, philosophical argument on this, or philosophical thought project on this. Is it the artist who's pouring his heart and soul into the piece, his or her heart and soul into the piece? are they the ones who determine that it's art, or is it the people that are consuming the art and how it affects them that determines that it's truly art? Something to think about.
Yeah.
Maybe it's one, the other, maybe it's both. Maybe it's an interweaved complex system that we don't fully understand, and which is why some things are lasting and some things aren't. It's just subjective. But anyway, I'm glad you were able to use this YouTube video to come to your understanding on this and to come to your feelings on this. Speaking of which, isn't YouTube one of the places that people can find this podcast?
It is. You can find this podcast in a multitude of places. As a matter of fact, we've got a website, thezennialchronicles.com or zencron.com. We've also got social media. We have our podcast we put out on Facebook. We've also got a Twitter page, just, at Zencron. Look that up. And by the way, what he mentioned, we do have a YouTube page. And you should be listening to us on that. And if you're not, go to YouTube right now and search the Zennial Chronicles. Make sure that you find the page. And if you're listening to this video, because this will be a video file, you can just load it up and listen to it. Make sure that you hit the like button if you like what we're talking about. And make sure you hit the subscribe button as well. Oh,
even if you don't like it, still hit like, because we'd like that.
Yeah.
That'd make us feel happy.
That helps. That helps us. That helps YouTube spread the word about us to other people. So please do that. Make sure that you hit the subscribe button as well while you're down there, because it's right next to the like button. And that shows that you like the channel. And when we put out another video or podcast, it'll be there. And you'll get notified. You'll get told when we do it, because sometimes we're a little inconsistent. Sometimes we put out a video instead of a podcast if we can't do a podcast. That happens. And you should totally know when that happens.
And sometimes like last week, when we normally put stuff out on Monday, this will be coming out on Monday. But like last week, when we normally put stuff out on Monday, no, we put it out on Sunday. And if you didn't know that it was coming out, you wouldn't know it was there.
Yeah.
And there's another step they have to do, Mike.
Oh.
There's another step. You said like.
Yes.
You said subscribe.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did.
But to get that notification, to get told when these are coming out, there's something else that you have to do. And Mike?
What is that?
Mike.
What?
I'm going to let you say it this time.
Shut.
I'm going to let you be the one to do it. Mike, what do they have to do?
Well, obviously, right next to that subscribe button.
Yeah, what is it? What do they have to do?
They got to click that bell.
Click the bell.
That's right.
You click that bell, you get the notification whenever we put these out, whatever day, time, whatever. And yes, as I keep promising, we will have video soon.
Yes.
You may not want to see us. I think it would be amusing. I've been told by a few people, well, I kind of listen to podcasts, but it's better when I can actually watch them. All right, we're working on it, people.
Yeah, we're going to make it happen.
We will. While you're there liking, subscribing, and clicking that bell for the notification, check out Mike's other pages. I'm going to do these runs really quick today. He's got a video game page with his wife, Chronozode Games.
Yes.
Check that out. He's got a music page by himself, Ruling Note Music.
Yes.
Check that out. Please like, subscribe, click the bell on all of those. The more people listening, the more people can listen, and we'll be suggested to listen.
Yeah.
And why not? Gives you something to do in your day.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank y'all for listening to this one again, and we'll be back again next week.
Y'all have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.